Okay, so you were saying that you've been haunted since your childhood by your memories of Lake County, and you've...
Well, since not exactly my childhood, but my young adulthood, even. It was, to me, it was a kind of Shangri-La, if that term means anything to you young whippersnappers. It was the closest thing to utopia that I could imagine. So anyway, I spent an awful lot of time, particularly during the time that I was with Lois, because she, in her girlhood, grew up on a homestead in Montana, so that she had the same feeling toward that I had toward Lake County. So she and I spent a lot of time out in Northern California and on up into Oregon looking for something which might come close to trying to recapture those days. And she and I never... Oh, wait a minute. I was with her when we got the ranch in Forestville. That was in 1984. And as I say, it hasn't worked out as I hoped. But I have still held on to it through thick and thin, always hoping that not only would I be able to escape there occasionally at least, but that eventually I could strike some kind of spark in the breasts of one or more of my children, and that they would carry on after I kicked the bucket.
Well, you may be interested in knowing that one of Erica's cousins bought a cabin up in Cobb a couple of years ago.
Interesting.
And Erica and Noah have gone there a couple of times to spend the weekend.
Uh-huh.
So there's no farm animals, but it is Cobb.
That's interesting indeed.
Yeah.
Okay, so that with that preliminary.
So the how old were you when you were in Lake County, living in Lake County? Your age?
I was there when I was 10 and 11. Okay. And then there were summer camps for another 2 years after. The glory years were those in which we spent the year around. But there were a couple or three years after that when we went up there in the summers.
To the same cabin or a different?
And then toward the very end, the fellow from whom we had been renting the cabin that I was really so fond of wanted it back, and so we tried spending the time with another fellow, the property of another fellow.
Right.
But it wasn't the same because it didn't have the creek running right alongside the house. Now, do you remember where we left off?
Right there. The guy repossessed the cabin and you had to head back down to Palo Alto.
Right. Okay. That would have been 1940. And it might seem that if I were born in 1927, in 1940, I would have been 13. But because my birthday doesn't come until the very end of the year, in most of 1940, I was still only 12. And there were several changes when we moved back to Palo Alto. Did I mention anything about our buying the house next door to us along about 1936 or 7 from the Ellsworths. I believe I mentioned the name Ellsworth. She helped my mother with the nursery school for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And her husband was an unemployed but very, very competent carpenter.
Okay. Yeah, you did mention. Okay.
But they, despite the fact that my mother tried to help out by hiring Mrs. Ellsworth with the nursery school and give Charlie Ellsworth odd jobs around the place, adding on a sleeping porch and so forth, they had to sell their house. And so my mother was so successful with the nursery school that she bought it. And I and my brother and father and she moved into that rather than sharing with the nursery school itself. So that was a difference. And I was now ready for the ninth grade. And in many school districts, that would have meant I would be a freshman in high school. But in the Palo Alto school district, it meant that I was going to junior high school. I was in the final grade of junior high. The high school at the time was only 3 grades. And I don't remember very much worth mentioning in my ninth grade year. It was Jordan Junior High. It was probably about half a mile, maybe a little bit more than that, from where we were living. And I was riding a bicycle at that time, and that's how I got back and forth to school. They had a homeroom system. Our homeroom teacher was also our English teacher. Miss Wells was her name. Known to the boys in the class as Horseface Wells.
Okay.
And I sat in the back of the room and sat next to one of the guys who was kind of a roughneck. And he and I used to whisper back and forth, including our opinions about Horseface Wells. But somehow or other, Wells thought that I was a star pupil and made of me a teacher's pet, whether I wanted it or not, which I didn't. And I'll never forget the time that the class had been out of hand most of the day, and she kept them all in after the normal time for adjournment at the end of the day, except for me. And I was so surprised to be singled out in that way that I couldn't think of anything else to do but to follow her instructions, which were to walk out. In retrospect, I should have said I would prefer to stay with my friends. But they didn't seem to hate me and resent me for being a teacher's pet. So I got along okay through that year. She singled me out to write the class poem for the annual. And it still exists somewhere. I had a major development in that I joined the Boy Scouts. And the Boy Scouts are in bad repute nowadays because some people consider them to be overly authoritarian and overly patriotic and overly religious and mostly because they're considered to be homophobic. And I don't know where that controversy stands at the moment, but it was no item for discussion back in those days. Nobody ever heard the word homophobic. It would have been unthinkable to have a scoutmaster who was a predator of young boys. If there had been a rule handed down by the national organization that no predators of young boys need apply for a position as scoutmaster, I would have been all in favor of it. In the summer of 1940, I guess it was. No, I think it must have been 41. I went to Boy Scout camp at Lake Huntington, which I just looked up in the Atlas and found that it's in Fresno County. Very beautiful setting. And the idea in Boy Scout camps was to get as many merit badges as you could. And I got merit badges in bugling and art and probably two or three other things. And the whole goal in Boy Scouts, as you probably don't know, was to get enough merit badges to go up through certain ranks. You began as a tenderfoot. Second step was second class, I guess. Third, I guess, was first class. And then they began a gradation from star class to life class to Eagle Scout. And I eventually reached the life class. I had to have 20, 25 merit badges, something like that. But I was never able to get one in swimming. Otherwise, I would have been an Eagle Scout. I sank like a rock in water. Tried as I might, and the more I tried, the more water I inhaled, it seems. It got to be mental, I imagine, more than anything else. Still with me, I've never been able to swim, never. So that brings me to my sophomore year at Pali High. And it was probably 2 or 3 miles from where we lived. But once again, my bicycle was the means of transportation, and it was very good exercise. And one of the things I remember fondly, because it came in handy all the rest of my life, was that I took a class in typing. And I would recommend that everybody do so if they haven't already. And I became fairly good at it. I think I got up to about 60 words a minute. And if I remember correctly, that was net, after having suffered subtractions for errors. So that was pretty good, I guess. Anyway, I got good grades in it. I enjoyed my sophomore year. I think it may also be worth mentioning that my brother and I, during this period, attempted to keep in some contact with our father. It was still back in Davenport, Iowa. I'm not altogether sure exactly what he was doing. I think he probably had by this time settled whatever problem there was with the probate of his father's estate. But my brother and I would write letters to him occasionally. And he would reply occasionally. And particularly, we contacted him at holiday times. I'm not sure exactly what years we might have done this, but my brother got very interested in recording, making home recordings with discs that use some kind of stylus. I don't know the technique. And I remember making greetings to send to my father in that form. Now, I'm very, very foggy on this, but for reasons that I cannot recall, we, that is my mother and brother and I, moved back from the Ellsworth house into the nursery school house by the fall of 1941. And I don't know why. But I do remember this, that the only space available for me was a kind of an anteroom at the very rear of the house. You had to go through my brother's bedroom to get to it. It was no larger than a large closet. And since it was the only thing available, I accepted it. And in retrospect, I now realize that it was good for me in that it put limits on the amount of junk that I could acquire and clutter up the space with. I had to be efficient. There was a little desk there that I used for my homework. That was a 6-foot-long bed and a room to turn around. There may have been a small closet. It was probably 6 feet by 8 feet total, something like that. So, I had a radio by the bed, which I used to use to listen to programs like Your Hit Parade, which would have Frank Sinatra singing the leading songs of the day. And I was listening to that radio, and I was probably listening to popular music on some station or other, when the program was interrupted by a news flash. It was the morning of Sunday, December 7th of 1941. And I went into, I think it was about 9 o'clock in the morning, our time. It was much earlier in the morning, Hawaii time. And I remember going into the kitchen where my mother was working on breakfast and telling her what had happened, and she knew immediately that it meant we were at war. So the following day, Pally High, we were all called into the auditorium to listen to Franklin Roosevelt's speech to Congress, in which he spoke about a day that will live in infamy and so forth. And of course, that profoundly affected my life as time went by. In the short run, it didn't make much difference. Well, now, I do remember that there was a fellow in my Latin class whose name was Toshio. Can't remember his last name. He was a jolly fellow and I liked him. And I think he had tears in his eyes when he told us that he was going to have to leave. We talked about that in my civics class, which was taught by a woman named Miss McCulley. And she said that it was necessary to protect the Japanese from vigilantes and hooligans who would otherwise attack their places of business and their homes and beat them up on the streets and so forth and so on, which I found rather persuasive. However, it was not included in any of the rationale that was given us by the government. It was argued that the Japanese were not to be trusted, and that the younger generation was still dominated by the older generation, and the older generation was still loyal to Japan, and so forth and so forth and so on. So there was very little debate about it at the time. The Supreme Court, of course, ruled it to be constitutional, and so that was that. Rationing was put into effect, rationing of gasoline and tires and rationing of various kinds of food, sugar and meat, most essentials. And it affected the nursery school. My mother had to go before the ration board to appeal for some allocation of stamps, which would enable her to feed the nursery school children their lunches. And she was able to get them to see reason and also to give her a proper allocation for gasoline, because part of her service in the nursery school was to pick up the children whose parents didn't have the time or desire to do so on their own, and to take them home at the end of the day. So she needed to have gasoline for that purpose, and the rationing board saw it that way. So to make a long story short, I don't recall that we had to change our lifestyle very much at all. It was probably difficult to get certain kinds of meat, the better kinds of meat. There was no limit on what they called organ meats. You could buy all the beef heart and liver and kidneys and whatnot that you might want. And to me, that was kind of an adventure. I wasn't familiar with some of these things, but I thought they were fine. So we had a lot of beef heart. And as I say, we didn't feel the pinch, not that I recall anyway. We, of course, did our bit as we could to buy war bonds and to collect scrap metal and save fat from cooking, to take into a collecting point from time to time. We supported the effort as best we could. And I think we probably helped the effort in some respects by providing this nursery school service for families in which the father might have been drafted into the armed services. And if there was somebody to take care of the children, the mother could have volunteered for service in a hospital or something of that sort. And I imagine that happened. And my mother was happy enough to do that. So things went along.
So when you went into the high school, is Oscar now going to that same school or still private?
My brother was still in private school. Okay. My brother and I never went to the same school at the same time.
Okay.
Now, along about February, I think it was, maybe March, in the normal course of events, I would have gone out for the track team. I never went out for the basketball team. I should say that they in those days they had four different divisions. 110, 120, 130 and unlimited or varsity. Roughly speaking, they were weight classifications, but it was actually a combination of weight, height, and age. And I would have probably been okay in the 120 division of basketball if I had gone out for it. I was able to jump high enough, but I had never had any practice dribbling or shooting or any of those aspects of the game, and so I never went out for that. But track and field, I knew how to run, so I was all set to sign up for that until I became very sick with something that was diagnosed as scarlet fever, or more commonly known as a strep throat. Oh dear, I sound as though I have one right now. A strep throat was a serious business. As I soon found out, my temperature started going up, and it went up, and it kept going up to about 106. And my mother brought in the family doctor . The same woman who had presided over my mother's pregnancies, except for the one in Mejia, Texas. And she was she knew a lot about all different branches of medicine. Fortunately, she was up on the recent developments in the control of bacterial infectious diseases, including strep, because sulfate drugs had quite recently been developed, and there was already a demand for them by the armed forces. But somehow our doctor, her name was Edith Johnson, was able to get some sulfanilamide and knew exactly how much to give me to control my raging fever. And it saved my life. I think that's the sickest I have ever been with the possible exception of my heart attack. But even there, I was taken to an emergency room in time that I don't think I was ever really in danger of dying from that, but I was in danger from the strep throat. Well, needless to say, this knocked out any hope of my going out for track that year. In fact, I had to stay home and recuperate for probably 6 weeks or so, and had to try to keep up with my studies in absentia. And in some respects, it was easy to do. For example, in English, the required reading that year was A Tale of Two Cities by Dickens. And Dickens was already a great favorite in our family. My mother had read David Copperfield to us. And so we all shared in the Tale of Two Cities. And eventually I wrote a book report on that and eventually returned to all of my other classes. And the rest of the school year was uneventful. I think maybe that was the year I went to Boy Scout camp. And the previous year was our last gasp at Mr. John Lee's property, which he called High Valley. We tried having a summer camp. This was the year before Pearl Harbor. The summer before Pearl Harbor. We tried having a summer camp, and it was pretty much a disaster because my mother, by a fluke of history, had to put up with a number of moochers. A couple of friends from Stanford who said that they had been in my father's class way back when in the School of Education. They had fallen on hard times and wondered if there were some way that they could help out at the summer camp. Mostly they just needed free room and board. So my mother couldn't really think of anything useful for them to do, but tried to think of little things. And then my father's sister, my Aunt Pearl, her husband had come to the end of the line with her, and she needed a place to stay, and what could my mother say to that? And the trouble with Aunt Pearl is that she weighed over 200 pounds and was an enormous eater. So all in all, the camp was a losing proposition financially.
Can we take a quick break?
Yeah, sure. Now, I've said that there wasn't much change in our day-to-day lives, but there were some changes, and one of them that I remember is that my mother had to become a little more careful in her shopping, because there were certain shortages of some things that weren't on the ration list, but which were nevertheless necessary. And on the other hand, there were price controls on things like the cost of tuition at the nursery school. I'm not sure that it was really price controlled if she had wanted it to be, but she did want it to be, as being a good citizen. And on the other hand, as I say, there were things that were in short supply where the merchants were able to almost charge what the market would bear. So she needed to be a little more careful in her shopping. And I started going around with her as she shopped and became more interested in such things. I became very interested in food in general. I probably had been for some time, but maybe it increased during this period. I remember going with her to the butcher shop and selecting whatever was reasonable. And also, I guess I would extend this to watching her as she would prepare some of these things. There were different ways to prepare beef heart and so forth and so on. And this has influenced my later life, no question about it. I have always been interested in cooking. I've always been interested in shopping. I've always been interested in looking for bargains. And some people probably think all of these things were carried to an excess. But it's been part of my life, for better or worse. I'm trying to think of anything else significant that might have happened during this period. Well, let's move along to the spring of 1943. Let me think about this for a minute. No, let's back up to late 1942, when I was still 15. I fell hopelessly in love with the girl who was sitting in front of me in Latin. Her name was Jeannie Brokaw, and she was the most beautiful creature that God ever invented, and the sweetest. And the fact that she was not very good in Latin meant absolutely nothing to me. She, as far as I was concerned, she was perfection. And yet I didn't know how to let her know. I don't know whether you guys are familiar with the Peanuts comic strip, but Charlie Brown...
little red-haired girl, yeah.
Charlie Brown has a crush on a little red-haired girl. I had a hopeless crush on Jeannie Brokaw. I would follow her in the halls of Pali High between classes to figure out what other classes she went to besides Latin. And I tried following her after school to find out where she lived. But she usually took a school bus and I was not able to follow that. But one day, for one reason or another, she missed the school bus that day, and she started walking home. And I took that opportunity to follow her on my bicycle at a discreet distance of a block or so. and and eventually found where she lived, which was quite a ways away, probably a mile and a half or so. Well, I kept thinking and thinking about what I could do to let her know of my existence. I could look at her whole class in Latin, at least from the back, but she didn't, I didn't have any reason to believe that she knew who I was sitting in back of her. But finally, there came a time when there was going to be a school dance. And I summoned up the courage to write her a note. Which said, "Would you like to go to the dance this Saturday?" I remember the exact wording. The reaction was better than I could have imagined. She turned around and smiled broadly and said, "I'd love to."
Woohoo.
Well, so far so good. But then problems arose. How were we going to get to the dance? A lot of my classmates being 16 or older were able to drive, had driver's license. A few of them had cars of their own, I suppose, although they were certainly limited by gas rationing and so forth. But they were able to use their parents' cars for things like school dances. Well, I was in no such shape. And I couldn't think of anybody with whom I could double date. And so in the end, I couldn't think of any option than to be driven by my own mother. And have her wait around outside the school gym until the dance broke up and drive us home. Drive us back to Jeannie's home. Well, that was the least of it. I foolishly thought that I could bluff my way through dancing by something that our teacher at Cobb Valley School had tried to teach us one day. which might have been the Texas two-step or something. I don't know if it ever had a name or deserved a name. Because when I got poor Jeannie out on the dance floor, I started stamping on her feet. And after a few minutes, I suggested that we retire to the sidelines, and we spent the whole rest of the evening watching other people dance. And that brought into play another one of my total miscalculations. I had absolutely no gift for conversation, and I couldn't think of a thing to say, except once they played a song by Glenn Miller that I liked. So I said, I like that song, hoping that might start a conversation of sorts, but unfortunately, Jeannie didn't find that to be very stimulating. And and so we spent the entire evening saying practically nothing.
Awkward silence.
It was disastrous. One of the most humiliating days or nights of my life. Oh, God, I blush to think of it. Poor girl. Poor girl. Anyway.
Why didn't she contribute something conversationally?
Well, because she was as bashful as I was.
There's got to be something to talk about.
I can't remember a thing.
Latin class,
sports,
strep throat.
We might have said something about Latin, but that didn't last long. Anyway.
Gene, did you have an analogous experience at some point?
Maybe a little younger.
Well, I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Oh, yeah.
Eighth grade.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Eighth grade?
I don't know. Junior high. Yeah, eighth, maybe.
Okay.
If only, you know, you just feel, if only you could, like, sort of go back in time, what you know now.
Yes.
Transport back to then.
Yes.
It's so much different.
Exactly right. I spend a lot of my life thinking back on that and a lot of other things that I might have handled differently. I am told that I shouldn't waste my time on such exercises, since they are all futile, but I can't help myself. I'll move on now to something a little happier.
So was that it with, what's her name?
Oh, I'll have something more to say about that a little bit later. It wasn't my last experience. I guess that it was in March of that I think was late 42, in March of 43, by which time I would have turned 16. I'm wrong in this. I'm all bollocks up in this. I was still only 15, when the time came to sign up for track again, I was a junior. And this time I was in fairly good health. One of the side effects of a strep throat often is that it does something to your heart. And I sometimes wonder if that had something to do with it, the fact that it finally caught up with me in June of 2000 when I had my heart attack. But when I was a junior, I felt fine and signed up for whatever was available, and it turned out that with my combination of age, height, and weight, I could have qualified for 120 class. And if, in fact, I had gone in, had continued on that path, I probably could have cut quite a swath through the opposition, because I was pretty good. But there was nobody else in that class at Pali High, and so I was put into the 130-pound class, not just based on weight, as I say, but we called 130 pounds. And I told the coach that I wanted to go out for the quarter mile. I guess because I had watched that event at a track meet that my father took me to. I don't know why exactly, but for whatever reason, I figured that I was better qualified for that than a shorter or longer distance. And without my proving it in one way or another, he just took my word for it. And the season began with a conference-wide relay meet. Pali High was a member of the Peninsula Athletic League, which included teams from Burlingame, San Mateo, Redwood City, San Jose. Palo Alto. And in this relay meet, our coach had us signed up for a 4x100 event and a medley relay consisting, I think, of a 100-yard dash to lead off, two 20s, and ended up with a 440. And lo and behold, to my great surprise, he had me running anchor in the 4x100 event. And I had never asked for it or shown any particular aptitude for a short sprint. but there it was. And also, we had very, very little time to practice handing a baton. But somehow we carried on this sprint relay successfully, except with the limitation that I was so green that I didn't realize the race went on until somebody broke a string across the finish line. I saw a chalk mark on the track 10 years short of that point and slowed down. However, I was given such a lead by the three other guys that even though I was down to a jog, I still broke the tape and we won that race.
Wow.
I should have mentioned that one of the other fellows in this weight division with me was a very good sprinter. And another was a very good hurdler and high jumper. And they're the ones who really made it possible for us to win. Then came the medley relay, which might have been the final event, I don't know exactly. And once again, they gave me a substantial lead to start the anchor leg with my quarter mile. And I still forgot to wait for the tape, and I slowed down before I got to that point. But I had run a sufficiently fast anchor, along with the fact that they had already given me a goodly lead, that we broke the meet record. And this appeared in the San Francisco Chronicle that following day. That was pretty interesting. Except they had all of our first names wrong. I was Jack Anderson.
I like that.
The next meet, I'm going to go into a little detail here because it all leads into what I will end up with. Our next event was a dual meet with Burlingame High School on their track. Their track was made out of oyster shell. It was quite different from any of the others I ever ran on. It was a very fast track. And the leading quarter miler on the 130-pound division of the Burlingame team was a guy who had won that same event the previous year. And my teammates told me that he was very good. So I adopted a strategy of just following him until near the end, and if I had the strength, I would pass him, and if not, I would come in second. But as we got to the last 50 yards or so, I still felt full of pep, and I passed him and So that was very successful. I won in 56.4 seconds. And the next meet was in San Jose. And before the quarter mile in that case, one of the San Jose team came up to the little group that I was with from Pali High and said, "Who's the guy who ran 56.4 last week?" And they pointed to me, and that made me feel good. And again, I won. And it came down to the final meet of the year, which was an all-conference meet, in which I finally got my comeuppance. I followed the same strategy of holding back a little bit until near the end and didn't have quite the kick that I needed, so I came in second. However, because we had these other fellas on the team in the same division as I, and I did run again on the winning relay team, so all in all, we won our weight division for the whole conference, and that entitled us, under the rules of the athletic department of Pali High, to get block P letters, which were a mark of some prestige. Otherwise, for minor sports, they had what they call a small P. And one other thing happened that same spring. There was a games day set aside one afternoon in which representatives of various teams, the water polo team and the baseball team and the track team, were supposed to demonstrate to anybody who wanted to watch the rudiments of their sports. Well, I was eating lunch in the school cafeteria the morning, the noon time of that day, and a couple of guys from the track team who were on the varsity rushed up to me. I was eating a sandwich of some kind, and they said, "How would you like to run with us this afternoon?" I said, "Huh?" They said, "We're going to try to break the school record in the 4x440 relay." These two guys were both quarter milers on the varsity, and they were going to bring along with them a guy who ran the 880. And they wanted me to run with them, even though I was only on the 130 team, because they didn't know anybody else who was able to run 56.4. Well, it was a surprise, to say the least. And I wouldn't be sure how I would be able to do it, having eaten as recently as I did. But there was this to be said for it. On all of the other meats, I slept very badly the night before. I was always terribly nervous. I always had butterflies. On this occasion, since I didn't know what was coming, I didn't have that problem. So anyway, it was to be an exhibition, really. There was no competition. We were running against the clock. And I think I ran the second leg. And there were a number of people in the stands. Including Jeannie Brokaw. So I did my best, and by coincidence, somebody timed my leg of it, and I did run another 56.4. And the group of the four of us did, in fact, break the school record for that event. So, shortly after this, I was approached by a fellow named Dick Jennings, who was fellow member of the junior class, who had moved to Pali shortly after December 7th because he was an army brat. His father had been stationed in Hawaii. And a lot of the school kids in Hawaii who could afford to do so, that is, the children of army officers usually, were evacuated to the mainland, including Dick Jennings. And he was a very hail fellow, well met, very, very good at making friends. And so it seems that he had taken it upon himself to work out a political slate for the elections that were about to come up for student body officers. He looked upon himself as a kingmaker, with himself occupying a position a little bit out of the main spotlight, although he was going to run for one of the offices, but not one of the top offices. he had handpicked one of the two varsity quarter milers to be commissioner of finance. His name was Richie Muller. And he handpicked another varsity quarter miler named Dick Cowdery to be the commissioner of boys' athletics. Dick Jennings himself was going to run for commissioner of publications. And he asked me to run for commissioner of public welfare. And my jaw must have dropped. Because I had never run for anything. I had never even thought of running for anything. If I had thought of it, I would have laid down until the thought went away. It just was nothing I was interested in or thought I was qualified for. The fellow running for commissioner of public welfare was named Philip Pierce, and he had a long record of having run for a lot of officers. I think at the time he was Chief Justice of the Student Body Court, so something fairly responsible of that sort. And it was just assumed that he was made for the job and that it was a shoe-in. And I don't know why Dick Jennings took it upon himself to try to recruit a competitor to Phil Pierce. Nobody had anything against Phil. I just have never understood it. So I said I wasn't interested. I said I'm totally unqualified and so forth and so forth and so on. Maybe he let it drop on that occasion and maybe he came back later. I can't remember the whole sequence of events. But he kept after me. He said, I think I remember on one occasion, he said, "Don't worry, I'll tell you what to do." I guess that by that he meant he would instruct me as to the rules of Robert's Rules of Order and what other fine points might be needed to fill the position. Well, I thought, in the end, that nothing would come of it. There was nothing to lose, since Phil Pierce was so popular. I might as well let Dick Jennings have his little joke, even if it meant that his whole slate would not be elected, only 3 out of the 4. But I just couldn't believe that it was going to happen, and so I relaxed until I began to get rumors that maybe it wasn't a shoe-in for Phil Pierce, And I began to get nervous, and I began to tell my friends, for God's sake, don't take this seriously. And I began making posters to vote for Philip Pierce. And if I had been a praying man, I would have prayed mightily that this whole thing would go away. It's now after 7 o'clock, and Virginia is planning to have dinner at 7, and it's been about an hour and a half, and therefore it's time to break up, and I'm going to have to continue this story next time.
Okay.